You're listening to episode 9 of the Change Source podcast show with Emma Murphy. Firstly, thanks for being with me today, and I'm very excited to welcome our guest, Laurie Silverman. Laurie owns Partners for Progress, a management consulting firm which is dedicated to helping organizations think and act differently in order to ratchet up their performance. She's authored 5 books, along with hundreds of articles and workbooks, and has just launched her latest book, Business Storytelling for Dummies, which she co-authored with Karen Dietz. You can get both Kindle and paperback versions of the book at Amazon. And it's available now. I also just downloaded it, so I recommend that you do this. It can be a great book to read over the Christmas period. So as a business strategist, Laurie helps organizations to create and implement breakthrough strategic plans, as well as successfully carry out large, messy changes. On the subjects of schmoozing, organizational change, and using story techniques at work, she's highly sought after as a keynote speaker because of her practical, results-driven, highly energized and enthusiastic approach and magical stories that inspire audiences to take action. So welcome, Laurie. It's great to have you here today, and I'm really looking forward to hearing your insights and advice on using storied approaches in organizational change.
Thank you for inviting me, Emma.
You're welcome. So let's go ahead and get started, Laurie. Can you give us a brief overview of the work that you do to help organizations lead and manage change?
Sure. There are typically 3 ways in which organizations engage me in change. The first is they may ask me to work with them on scenario planning or strategic planning, and within that, we're looking at breakthrough strategies for the future. And that means, as a result, then, that we need to do transformational change in order for those breakthroughs to take hold. Another way in which they might engage me is they may have a specific initiative or project or program, such as one I worked on recently on data quality for a large retailer, which also required transformational change to take place. And then third, sometimes I just get phone calls from people, as I did a couple of years ago, where someone calls me on a Thursday and says, "Hey, Laurie, we hear that you're really good at figuring out very difficult situations and making change happen, and we'd love for you to show up on Tuesday." And I say to them, "Well, tell me a little bit about the situation." And they said, "Well, you know, we really can't do that." And my response is, "Well, can you not tell me, or do you not know?" And they'll say, "Well, a little bit of both, but if you show up, we know that within an hour you can figure it out for us." And so that often results in, you know, really some big cultural shifts that organization needs that they're just starting to think through.
Wow, that's great. So you're the go-to lady for messy change, Laurie.
Absolutely messy. and when people don't know quite what to do.
Okay. And so obviously you've recently launched your book, Business Storytelling for Dummies. And so I wanted to talk a little bit more about some of the ideas in your book. I'm interested to know, what do you think is causing more organizations to start embracing this idea of storytelling within their change communications?
Sure. You know, the statistics around change working or not working have been unequivocal for the past 10 years. You know, you've got 60, 70, 80% of changes that just aren't taking hold in organizations. And the use of story in business is really to do only one thing, and that is to move people to action. So when we think about the sorts of actions that people need to take in change, they need to get support from key stakeholders. They need to get commitment from people who need to implement the change at the front line of the organization. They may need to get folks to behave or do things differently or think or feel differently. So all of the reasons that people are embracing this approach is that there's really no other form of communication that's both right brain and left brain, or what we call whole brain thinking, that really sparks people immediately to say, yes, this is something that I need to do.
Great. And, obviously I'm working in the UAE at the moment, and I'm definitely seeing this trend is increasing to move away from, you know, very factual-based information when we're trying to launch change, but to really try and get inside the heads of our employees and think about, you know, what do they want to hear, what will resonate with them, how can we bring this change to life for them. So, for example, like doing day in the life scenarios, mm-hmm. painting a picture of the future, and I think storytelling is just a great way to do that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the real dilemmas with factual or data-based information is that it really only engages the left side of our brain. And what we're starting to really learn is that people make decisions on the right side of their brain in the unconscious piece. And so by the time we engage them on the left-hand side, they pretty much know what they want to do. And that means that all we're then engaging in terms of conversation is debate. So we're really all about using story for meaning, whereas facts, data, figures are all about sense making. So to me, the real challenge is how do you move from sense making to meaning making? And if in a change, you have to get people to, you know, to understand that there's real meaning behind the transformation that's taking place, then we're required to use stories. We don't have any other communication that will help us there.
Yeah, it's so key for increasing engagement as well and making people feel a part of something.
Absolutely.
So, Laurie, how can you get to know key stakeholders on a project through stories?
Well, you know, let's step back for just a second. There's really two ways to use stories, and you've started to talk about one of them. You can either push information or push stories to other people, or you can pull stories out of them. So when we're talking about getting to know key stakeholders through stories, our approach is to pull stories out of those people. Yeah. Now, the use of questions, unfortunately, only gets you information, which gets you back to what I talked about just a few minutes ago, which is sense making. So instead, we teach people how to use story prompts so that they can get far better and richer information out of key stakeholders through just hearing a couple of different stories. So if you'd like, I can tell you a little bit about what a story prompt is and how to create one if you think that would be helpful.
Yes, that would be brilliant. Thanks.
Terrific. The main structure of a story prompt, it usually has two parts to it. The first part, and I'll just use a typical phrase, is the phrase, tell me about. So it could be, tell me about a problem that won't go away, or tell me about a dream you have for the way this work should be done that hasn't yet been realized. The real critical words in that statement is the word about. Because if I take that out and I say, tell me what, or tell me who, or tell me why, all I've done is taken a question and made it into a question statement, which does not evoke a story. So we really want to use that phrase, either tell me about or tell me a story about. Now, you can use a couple of other phrases that will also evoke stories, things like, you know, paint for me a picture of, or visualize for me a time when. What you want to stay away from is anything that causes people to describe rather than to tell. So a phrase like, help me to understand, is not going to get you a story. Mm. It's going to get you a description of a situation. Now, the back end of the statement is as important as the front end. So I don't want to say to someone, tell me about all the issues you're facing, because then they're going to think about a million different things. We want the back end of that story prompt to be very specific so that people only have one or two or maybe three situations to come to mind that they can choose from to tell you about.
That's great. And Laurie, just one more question on that. Would you advise using this throughout the change journey so that we can record the progress and we can start to share success stories?
Absolutely. We encourage using it as soon as possible. So I'm working on a change right now with a government agency, and we're putting forth a new technology vision. We've gone out almost immediately to stakeholders with a very, very rough draft of what that future story might look like, and we're not even telling them it's a future story. We're saying it's a scenario, and we're asking them through story prompts to give us their reactions to it. And the reason we're doing that is we want to evoke in them the pain and urgency that's necessary to actually move forward with this vision. So from my perspective, and thank you for asking the question, we need to start pulling stories out of people as soon as possible, and we need to do that throughout all the phases of a project in which all the phases of change are also attached.
That's great. And have you used, would you record some of these stories on video, or, you know, what's the best way to share them?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. sometimes they're just useful within work groups themselves. So it could be teaching leaders how to prompt stories in a department meeting and having those stories be shared just between the coworkers who spend most of their time together.
Yeah.
It could be that it's more deliberate, where as the change journey is going on and you start to get some really big successes. I know when one client I was working on in a data quality project, we found two individuals who were doing some work above and beyond everyone else. We asked them to start making presentations to key management in the organization, and those stories were captured by video. So there are a number of different ways you can do that, but always be mindful that you need to ask permission from people before you do so, even if they're your employees.
Okay, yeah, that's great. Thanks, Laurie, and some useful tips that you can start using straight away. Thank you. And how can we actually use storytelling to influence and motivate employees as well when trying to implement change?
Well, you know, it depends on what your framework for change is. So I'm just going to put one forward that helps me to attach stories. So I use Gleicher's change model, which says that in order for change to happen, three things have to be in place all the time, and that is dissatisfaction with the status quo, a vision of the change itself, and first steps. So for each one of those pieces, story is extremely relevant, whether you're pushing stories out to people or you're pulling stories out of them. So, for example, in the dissatisfaction piece, I may start going to employees and asking them to tell me stories of when they've had significant issues happen relative to the change that we're trying to promote, so that I can use those stories back with them to say, yes, those are the sorts of issues that we do plan to address. So sometimes we might actually evoke what we call ain't it awful stories.
Yeah.
For the purpose of just saying, yes, that's what we're going after. Now, we don't want to support those stories continuing. We want to, you know, replace those stories with the vision of where we're going, but sometimes they can be useful. We can also have leaders who are sharing stories of dissatisfaction, not with the present day situation, but for example, when I work on strategy, we're often today looking out at the year 2025, and when you start to look at the scenarios around that for particular businesses and what their future might look like, it's not always really pretty. And so giving people stories about what those various scenarios might be like so they can themselves place them in the future and say, oh my gosh, if this is the way life is going to be, you know, what does that mean to me and my organization and my livelihood?
So it's almost a wake-up call as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And can work extremely well to help shift people from being comfortable with what's going on to starting to be uncomfortable and saying, well, what else can we do instead?
That's great. And so obviously, normally one of the first things we do on a project is we communicate the vision for the change. Can you give us some tips on what we should consider when we're actually going out and communicating that vision for the first time?
Sure. There's actually a couple of different stories that are really helpful when we're talking about vision. So let me go back to the technology project that I just mentioned that I'm working on with a government agency. So I have the leader of a technology group who has his own dream. He has a dream about where he thinks technology should go in the organization. And when he was hired a year ago, that dream came out in his interviewing process and was confirmed by the leadership of the organization. Now, obviously, it wasn't very specific, but it was what they hired him on. Mm-hmm. So he's been elaborating on his own dream and getting other leaders individually at high levels to articulate what their dream is for technology. That's one sort of future story. Now, the reason those are important is that when you have your own personal dream, people can't argue with that. They can't say, no, you're wrong.
Exactly.
It's your personal dream. So they often engage in it, and then you can say, you know, tell me about your dream for what I've just shared, and people will often give you something in return. Another type of story that fits under vision is what we call a future story. Now, future stories are often co-created. So in this particular work situation at this government agency, what happened was the head of technology, along with a few of his peers, in the administrative area created the first draft of a future story for technology in the organization. Then we identified key stakeholders who we thought would give us some really great insight and input on this vision story, and we went and we talked with them one-on-one about, you know, tell us about your reactions to this situation, tell us what's missing here, and a whole bunch of other things so that we could eventually get their own dream for technology to come out. And what we learned in the process was absolutely fascinating. We learned what people loved about the culture and did not want changed, and we also learned some of their future desires that we had not included in that future story. So we're now in the process of recrafting the story and bringing it out again to people next week. Now, the other thing that we did with the first version of the future story, which was quite intriguing to us, is we took a group of about 20 people, people who work in technology and other parts of the organization. They were not people that we interviewed one-on-one. We sat them down with the story and we said, you've not seen this before, but just analyze it for us. Tell us what opportunities this story brings forward from a technology perspective. And I believe they identified 8 or 9 opportunities. Then I said to them, for each of these opportunities, tell me what had to have happened in the organization in order for this opportunity to be realized. And when we did that, we went, oh my gosh, those are some of the first projects that probably have to get done to make this technology vision a reality if we indeed go with this kind of framework for a vision story. Obviously, with the stakeholder feedback, it's going to get tweaked a bit. But then once we had these opportunities and we said what has to be done behind each of them, then we said what problems will be solved if each opportunity is realized and what problems will still exist. And that gave us a handle on, is this vision for the future through this future story big and bold enough? And that was insightful, too. So all of that feedback will go along with the individual stakeholder feedback to formulate our second draft of the story next week. And then after next week, we'll meet with the Technology Advisory Board with the second draft and some other folks that we haven't talked to in the technology group. And then we'll craft our third vision of that story. But along the way, what I can tell you is that the sponsor for this technology vision has fully embraced what needs to be done going forward because of the story.
Wow, and that's just such a great example of making sure employees feel like they own the vision as well, which doesn't often happen because it's normally set at a very senior level or by the strategy department and then cascaded down. So I just love the way that you've included people and recut the vision to include people's ideas. It's brilliant.
Thank you. And to just keep in mind, this example is around a vision for technology, so it's not the vision for the organization. But to your point, what we are giving them through our work is a model and steps for doing that co-creation. I have just found over the years that when you sit people down to co-create the future, there really is no disagreement.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there is no future yet. And so the one thing that you can do to help this process is if you can add what I call environmental scan data, you know, go out to the year 2020, go out to the year 2025, you know, relative to the specific change you're working on, bring in some futurist data into your future story that will strengthen it even more.
Wow. And one other concept, Laura, you talk about in your book is the idea of creating a change as possible story. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Absolutely. So I've been a part of many changes where employees, as you know, are kind of sitting on the fence. And they want to embrace the change going forward, but they don't know if they want to really exert the energy because a lot of people say to themselves, this too shall pass.
Right? You know, they hope.
Like, how long is this leader going to be in place?
Exactly. We've heard this before.
Exactly. Or it's happened many times now.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I work, and let me give you an example of something I did with the CEO and president of a very, very large credit union. What we discovered was that in the credit union industry in the United States, it's not unusual for organizations about every decade to change out what's called their core processing system. And their core processing system is like the technology brain of the organization, so all other infrastructure pieces attached to it. And in this particular credit union, they had switched it out 10 years earlier before I knew them, but they had jury-rigged all of the old technology to the new core processing system. And then they went and they bought a whole bunch of other credit unions, and you can imagine the mess that they created as a result of doing this from a technology perspective. So now they were going to put in a new core processing system. But my question was, on face value, that's not a transformational change. That's what we call a transitional change. You know, just taking one system and replacing it with another. Now, what I've learned in my work is that all changes, whether they're transitional or developmental in nature, have a transformational component. And so when I went and I talked with the CEO with a couple of other folks with me, I asked him about what is it that's really behind this major change. And what he shared with us was that it had taken a number of years for the credit union to grow from $1 billion in assets to up to $1 billion in assets, like 10, 15, 20 years. It was a very long time. Mm-hmm. And now his board had given him the edict that he needed to grow from $1 billion to $2 billion in assets in 5 years.
Wow.
And so that was the transformation behind all of this. And what we then realized was that there was a huge piece missing from the equation, which was this whole thing around getting people to sell products and services. Now, in the credit union industry in the United States, you don't sell. Credit unions exist to get people out of poverty. So now we've got even a bigger issue, which is how are we going to get people to transform their mindset? Because they've come into the organization believing that they're doing good, and selling's not always framed within a doing good viewpoint. So I went to the CEO and I gave him the following story prompt. I said, this is a story when we bring all 550 employees together for a whole day to talk about this core processing system change, and they're going to go through a series of different workshops throughout the day. I would like you to start the day out with the story that answers this prompt. It was, tell me about a time in your life when you greatly resisted a change, and when you came to embrace it, there were great benefits on the other side. And he immediately said, I know that personal story. And the short of it was that when he was a child, he had very poor teachers in school. So he said to himself, I am going to become the best science teacher there is. And everything in his life was geared towards that. So when he got out of college, there really weren't a lot of jobs. So he went to work in a school that did not pay very well, but he was indeed a science teacher. And one day, a couple of months after he started working, a colleague came up to him and said, hey, I heard you just got married. Congratulations. And he said, yes, thank you very much. And the man said to him, do you plan on having children? And my client said, absolutely. I told my wife that she can quit working in like another year and we're going to have several kids. And his colleague stopped and he said to him, are you working in the cafeteria over lunch to make a little extra money now? And my client said yes. And then he said, are you working the bus line in the morning and when the kids go home in the afternoon to earn a little extra money? And my client said yes. He said, well, I'm here to tell you that if your wife doesn't work anymore and you're living off of your salary with children, you will qualify for food stamps. You will be in poverty.
Wow.
And my client was like chagrined. So he set out. He set out to go back to school on his own time. So imagine teaching during the day, getting his MBA in the evening. He could not afford it, so he went to work for a bank. In addition, and the only job he could get was in the evening doing collections of bad loans. Well, he was very, very good at it. And one night, the bank president showed up, and he's like, "Who are you? I want to meet you. You're doing such great work." And my client told him his personal story. And he said, when you're done with school, you come and see me because I think I have a job for you. And he did. The only problem was that my client didn't like the values of working in a banking environment.
Yeah.
So he eventually transferred over to working in this credit union as the head of operations and then eventually became the president and CEO. So now imagine telling that story to 550 people. Now, this gentleman was lucky. All of his employees love him. So they listened to this very, very painful story of all these painful choices he had to make. And he said, this is why I'm here in front of you today. And this is why I allow you to take time off of work, paid time, to go into school. He said, but the key message really is you get what you give. So today we're going to give you a lot of education, and I need you to give me your support and commitment to this change going forward. And I can tell you in terms of results, they hit that $2 billion mark 1 month before the 5 years was over.
Wow. So amazing to hear these success stories, Lori. Thank you for sharing. Wow. And I think, like, you know, that's something that's quite often missing is, you know, having that strong, powerful leader that really gets it and really understands his role as a leader of change. So, yeah, that's a brilliant story. Thank you. And just a couple more questions for you, Lori. Still on the theme of storytelling, but we touched on it slightly before, but I just wanted to go back to the idea of once we've actually started to implement change, how can we really capitalize on stories about people who have already started to embody the change? So you always get some early adopters and people who are real champions of the change, and quite often we miss taking the time out to showcase them, celebrate them, so that other people in the organization can see what they're doing. And I think it's a good way of inspiring everyone else to get on board.
You are absolutely correct. And what it means is that we have to let go of the stories that we were telling early on that initiated the change and that sparked it. Yeah. In order to celebrate what these people are doing. So there's three different types of stories that I think about collecting here. One is, who are those people who just have techniques or ways of doing work that work extremely well within the change itself? Those are the people we want to call out, and we want to ask them to share their stories around what it is that they're doing. Now, sometimes we call those best practices, but really, truly, these people are typically doing something that's amazingly innovative, and they have found ways that no one else has, so we need to obviously elevate that within the organization and make it visible to other people. The second is, some people find ways around some of the obstacles that are in the path to making the change happen. We need to get their stories out as well. You know, how did you identify these obstacles, and how did you find ways to mitigate them or get around them, and what can other people do who are standing in your same situation? And then there are people who just through sheer hard work make the change happen. We need to remember that their stories are as important, because sometimes they're forgotten, right? They're hidden in the woodwork. They're not the ones who are standing out. They're just the ones who are day in and day out, really figuring out small, unique wins relative to the change. Let's bring them to the surface as well.
Exactly, and we need people to be doing that in order to drive it forward, so it's so important.
Absolutely, and it's really all about making employees your heroes. It's not about making the leaders of the organizations your heroes, but the employees are the people who are helping to make this change happen, and then will be the ones to help solidify it into the DNA core of how the organization functions day in and day out.
Exactly. And, it won't happen without that critical mass of people on board.
Absolutely.
So when we're thinking about creating stories, Lori, can you give us some tips on how we should structure these stories? I know there's obviously different types of stories, but if you could just give some general guidelines.
Sure. If you're talking about like the story that I helped the CEO to create for the credit union, those types of stories follow the story arc. So very simply, they have a beginning, a middle, and an end. The beginning of the story has to do with setting the stage, the context, who are the characters, what sorts of details do we need to know in order for us to have sensory information so that we can actually resonate with the story that the person's telling us. The middle of the story is what's really the core conflict. Now, there may be many conflicts, but we really have to understand what's the core conflict that this story is bringing forward. And sometimes it's important to even exaggerate or magnify that core conflict, and you can do that often through humor so people realize that it may be embellished a bit. But it helps people to recognize that there truly was a problem that someone was trying to resolve. And then the end of the story has several pieces to it. The first is, what's the resolution to the story? How did it end? I'm fond of saying, you know, the world is not Disney, unfortunately. It doesn't always have to have a happy ending. The story just has to end, because what's really critical to the story is its key message. And a key message is no more than 7 to 9 words with a positively stated action that you want people to take. And then from that key message, you transition into saying, what is it that I need you to do as a result of this story? As I said early on, the only reason to use stories in business are to move people to action. They are not here for entertainment. They're not just here for people to say, oh, that was a nice situation. We need to get people to say, oh, my goodness, I need to do something different, and I need to do something different right now. So it's important for that key message, the transition, and the action statement to be at the end of the story. And then obviously, when we're talking about the core of the story itself, not just this conflict, but the plot, we have to have things like, you know, characters who have names. What we know through the research today is that it's best to have a single main primary character for people to identify with. And when they have two or more characters that are of importance, it tends to dilute the power of the story. Those characters need to have dialogue. We need to have them talking in the story, whether that be outer dialogue or their inner thoughts. We need to resonate with that conflict. We might bring it out through contrast or drama. There needs to be a lot of sensory information, you know. So, you know, what were people smelling, or what were they seeing, or what were they touching, or what were they feeling at any one given point in time? And then, as I mentioned before, we need to figure out, given all the different messages that that story can have, what really is the key message. And if I might just for a moment just elaborate on this. I oftentimes have people, I just had this happen the other day. I had a colleague call me up who's working on a major transformation in a manufacturing facility. And she said, I need a story that talks about XYZ topic. And I stopped her and I said, well, wait a minute. You need to approach that differently. You need to say to yourself, what's the key message I need the story to give to people, and what action do I need them to take? From there, it will help you determine which story is the best. So if you approach it from what subject do I need to tell people about, you're probably not going to come up with the best story to push out or the best stories to push out. You need to reverse your thinking and say, what's the message that's critical for people to understand and take action on?
Yeah, I think that's so helpful, Laurie, because, you know, just thinking of, you know, the past, some communications we've used, things like, you know, monthly newsletters, and it's missing that call to action. You know, it's, sorry, it's just, you know, here's information about what's happened so far and what you can expect, but it's missing the part around, okay, what do we want you to do?
Absolutely. So the framework that I've given you is the core of how most stories are created. Now, what we also know is that, and I just kind of want to tease your audience for a minute, because we write about this in Business Storytelling for Dummies, and this is really kind of new information that's coming out. Nancy Duarte talked about this in her book, Resonate. There are some stories where you want to first pose the opportunity instead of the problem. Because sometimes when you pose problems, it can cause paralysis in certain audiences. And so sometimes it's best to tease them with, here's the opportunity, and if we follow through on this opportunity, here's the problem that'll get solved. That's often the way future stories are created, and is what we're doing actually in the government agency that I'm working with. We're using a little bit different structure for those stories.
I like that, Laura, because, you know, there's often a lot of fear around change when it's first announced, and, you know, people are immediately thinking, oh, how does this impact me? Will I lose my job? So coming forward with the opportunities first is, it's a great way to turn people's minds towards, you know, a positive outlook on what's happening.
Absolutely, and it's why we use them more for future stories or dream stories. As I said, the CEO who I helped to paint his own personal story, we use the structure that I described a few minutes ago. So you have to know all different sorts of structures, as well as what's the message that you want to communicate, in order to figure out what's the best way to approach communications and change.
That's really great, Laurie. Thank you. I'm sure our listeners are really going to appreciate these ideas. And just finally, Laurie, where can we go to learn more about your work?
Absolutely. I've written three books about story. Business Storytelling for Dummies is the last one. And as you mentioned, people can get both the paperback and the Kindle copy on Amazon. I have a couple of websites that they can also look at. One is business-storytelling.com. storytelling.com that will feature all three books I've written, and the other two books are Wake Me Up When the Data is Over. That book is really cool. It was a three-year research project where 16 contributors and I went out to almost 200 people around the world for examples of the use of story in a whole variety of business functions, from financial management to project management to organizational change, and so on. We pick up on that in Business Storytelling for Dummies because we do have four really unique application chapters on story in sales, story in organizational change, story in marketing, and story in how do you raise funds, which is also critical for change projects, right? Because we always need those projects to be funded. And then we also have a piece in that book on the Business Story for Telling for Dummies on how to turn data and facts into stories, which I think is an absolutely just a terrific piece of work that we've been able to bring forward. Another website that people can check out is one called wakeupmycompany.com, which has the Wake Me Up When the Data is Over book. And then the third one is a website called Stories Trainers Tell, which is a third book I wrote in 2003, which has more than 80 stories that can be used in a training setting.
Wow, thanks, Lori. And obviously you do speaking as well, Lori. So is there information about that on your website?
Absolutely. If people go to my company's website, which is partnersforprogress.com, or you can also enter through lorisilverman.com, they can learn about my speaking, as well as there's a bunch of free articles that they can download for use in their organization on a variety of topics.
Thank you so much, Lori. And I will include all of this information on my podcast page so that you'll have access to all the links there. And we'll also include a link to Lori's new book that's available on Amazon, Business Storytelling for Dummies. So, Lori, I just want to thank you so much for your time today. It's been a real pleasure listening to you and learning from you. And I'd like to thank all the listeners for listening in today. And we'll be back soon with another podcast show. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Emma.